Okay, we're going to take phone calls now with Stanton Friedman and Jesse Marcel Jr. Those of you who live in the Roswell area, if you want to check in with us, maybe you can share some more information that they're collecting. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. These visitors, Stan, not just the Roswell case, in your opinion, who are they? Where are they coming from?
Well, I talk about where they come from in my new book, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, because it's the only case I know that's by myself and Kathleen Martin, who's Betty Hill's niece and has all her papers and stuff. The star map work there, which is talked about in the book, and I deal with the objections from the debunkers, indicates that at least some of these guys are coming from a planet around either Zeta 1 or Zeta 2 Reticuli, and that a very different situation from our own. The next star over from the sun is only 4.3 light years away, only, I say. It's a good ways. These two stars are both sun-like stars. They're only an eighth of a light year apart. That means they're 35 times closer to each other than the sun is to the next star over. So we're out in the boonies, and they've got next-door neighbors. And they're a cool billion years older than the sun. So it would seem to me perfectly logical that they would be the neighborhood center, if you will, out from which interstellar travelers migrated. I mean, let's face it, there's much more incentive to develop interstellar travel when you've got a neighbor. Remember, you can see the other star all day long from a planet around the other star. Something we can't do, obviously. We don't see many stars during the day.
True.
And it's no big deal, an eighth of a light year. You know, you go to Congress for money. Sure, we can go there. It's not such a big deal. So I think that's where some of them come from. And the kicker here is that billion-year head start on us. Bishop Usher figured out that the Earth was created on October 23rd, I think it was, 4004 B.C. Now, our picture of the universe has changed since then. Now we're talking billions of years. So, you know, rather than thinking we're the crown of creation, I think we don't know any more about what's going on outside of this planet than the apes and the nature preserves in Africa. I don't think we're the big shot. So I think we're at the bottom of the chart, so to speak.
Stan, what was that story about Epsilon? Was it Butes, that there was some kind of satellite going around our planet? Do you ever remember that?
Well, there were all kinds of things about satellites being detected long before we had satellites up there, and then a kind of star map. Yeah, I remember, and I can't remember the guy's name. It's on the tip of my tongue, who published, starts with an L. That's what happens when you get old. You remember it starts with an L.
Well, we'll find it. Someone will get it to us.
There was a supposed map that he figured out that this had to do with alien sources. And that's in my gray basket as well. But the work on Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli has stood up amazingly well. I talked to Terrence Dickinson, who'd been the editor of Astronomy Magazine when they published that big, very popular article about the star map work at my instigation. I'm an instigator way back in the 70s. And he, too...
It was John Keel, wasn't it?
What?
Wasn't it John Keel?
No. Oh, no. Not John Keel.
Because somebody...
the first article in Saga magazine about...
Okay. He wrote a book called Visitors from Space, which he talked about the star system, Epsilon Butes.
Oh, yeah, Duncan Lunan. That was his name.
Lunan. Okay.
Yeah, he's the guy who talked about booties, or however you pronounce that. But I can't help how you... You know, I didn't name any of the constellations. Don't blame me for it.
I'm not blaming you.
The Reticulan stuff, what's happened, incidentally, and one of the major changes, not only have we discovered lots of planets, well over 200 now in the local neighborhood, but our techniques for measuring distance, once we start using space-based observing systems instead of planetary-based ones, the Hipparchos satellite put up by the European Space Agency several years ago made millions of measurements and cut down the error bars, and now we have a much better picture of where things are and how far away they are and how close they are to their neighbors and all that sort of thing. And that's what makes it amazing that Marjorie Fish's work with the Betty Hill star map has stood up so well, despite the whole new approach to how we find out about things. So that's my best bet for where some of these guys come from. But I think, really, that there's a network of civilizations, call it the Galactic Federation, if you will. You know, it makes sense to me. We move out, we migrate, we colonize, things change. You know, I ask people sometimes when they get obstreperous, well, how many of you had your ancestors living here 50 generations ago? And occasionally I get an American Indian who can raise their hand, but most of us, our families migrated to North America, colonized North America. And yeah, I know people can say, hey, look, Australia got started by those convicts, you know. Maybe we're the devil's island of this corner of the galaxy.
I think we are. Let's go to the phones. We'll go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. Friedman, Mr. Marcel. Yes, I believe Mr. Friedman knows my dad, Bob.
And what would your last name be? Do you want to tell us that? Or
Bob Shirky is my dad.
Ah,
oh, yes, I do know him.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I just wanted to tell you that I never knew anything about that. I was born in Roswell in 1949, and like Mr. Marcel was saying, nobody ever talked about this. I didn't even know anything about it until I was watching television, Unsolved Mysteries, I think, back in 89, 86, somewhere in there.
Yeah, 89.
So the military silence was the way they all were, and my dad was that. And my dad was there, and he did see this, and I know that he got involved with Mr. Kaufman, and I've realized now Mr. Kaufman was part of the, he was a storyteller, but that.
Nice way to put it. Yeah, I met your dad.
Yes, I know you did.
He was the operations officer who prepared the plane that Jesse and his wreckage went to Fort Worth on.
That's right. He was the weights man. He had to weigh it before they put the wreckage on, and he stood there with Colonel Blanchard and watched him load the material on the plane. And it really happened. I don't doubt my father. He was a very straight military guy and he still is, but he's very ill right now. But he won't be making it to Roswell this year either. But
oh, that's a shame. Now, John, when you say it really happened, in your opinion, what was it that your dad talked about?
Well, he and Walter Haught and Glenn Dennis and those folks, that I've known those men all my life. Glenn Dennis was the funeral home director there,
right,
in town, and he actually took care of the funerals for my grandparents and many of my relatives. And Walter Haught lived down the street from
all of you.
And
yeah.
all not too far from my aunt and uncle. And we all grew up together.
Small town.
And my dad just told me that it was something that he had never seen before, and he was a pilot. He had flown, and he knew the buzz on the base at that time. And
if they were balloon parts or you know, parts of wreckage of craft, your father probably would have been able to identify that, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. He saw the beams. He saw the same beams being loaded on the airplane to be flown out, and he said it was nothing that any of them had ever seen before. And the colors were different, and the writing was different, and it wasn't anything that they knew of, you know. And, of course, the story came down over after many people had come out. After the story broke, then other folks, of course, came around and started sharing what they had seen. And my dad wasn't someone, he's not somebody just to spin a tale. And I just wanted to put that out, and I want to thank Mr. Friedman and Mr. Marcel for, and you, George, of course, for continuing this, and Dart and everybody.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you for everything you're doing, and
thank you.
A good time in Roswell.
Okay, so there we go again, Stan and Jesse. More backup for what you've said.
As a matter of fact, it was Bob Shirky who drove me out to Lincoln on Billy the Kid Day to have my first conversation with Glenn Dennis back when I was in town to do the NBC Unsolved Mysteries program in 89. And I talked to Bob before that, and then I called Glenn, and he said, you know, why don't we talk about it? And Bob drove me out in his car, and we had trouble parking. The one day a year when you can't park in Lincoln is Billy the Kid Day.
I love it. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
Name's Alex. How's it going, you guys?
Good, Alex. Thank you.
George, first time anyway. Gentlemen, I just have a quick question. I've been to Roswell, New Mexico, went to the UFO Museum. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I believe that that happened. I believe in the Travis Walton case back in 1975. And my question to you guys is, do you think Bob Lazar's claim is true that he actually worked in Area 51 and we have 9 UFOs in a thing that he de-engineered back in the late 80s?
If you go to my website at www.stantonfriedman.com, you'll see my take on Bob Lazar. I did a lot of checking, called lots of people at MIT and Caltech and Pierce Junior College, which is the one school he did attend. He didn't attend the others. What I found is Bob is an imaginative, bright guy who's made up a fancy story, and it doesn't stand up to careful analysis. I talked to his high school. He was in the bottom third of his high school class, incidentally, which proves he didn't go to MIT. So he's a bright guy. He puts on fireworks displays, or has in the past. Drove a jet-powered car, which is kind of nifty, frankly.
Los Alamos.
Yeah, but he didn't work for Los Alamos. He worked for a subcontractor, a company that hired people to work with professors who came into the big accelerator there. And he was a technical assistant, if you will, at Los Alamos. But the phone book shows he definitely worked for Kirk Meyer Corporation, not for the lab. So he tells a great story, sells a lot of videos, but his physics is faulty, and his story about his own background is faulty. So, okay.
I was just very curious.
Yeah, well, take a look at the article, www.stantonfriedman.com. My Take on Bob Lazar, I think it's called. You'll find it.
What about Dan? Words. How about Dan Burrish, Dan?
My personal opinion is that that's baloney, too. But that's a personal opinion. I've talked to Dan's mother, believe it or not.
Dodie. I have, too. Yeah.
But I've talked to George Knapp, and I'm impressed with George. And George and I disagree about Bob Lazar, but George did a lot of checking on Burrish, and the story doesn't seem to hold up. So I haven't written an article about it, though.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello, George.
Yeah, hi.
This is Jonathan calling out of Barksdale Air Force Base.
Okay, you're in Louisiana, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
I remember. Go ahead.
Got a quick question for you guys. I'll list the answer over there.
Okay.
What would be the use of a UFO having lights on it?
Having what?
Lights on it, Stan. Good question. That's a good question. Why would a UFO have lights all over it?
Well, you can think of several reasons. One, so that other UFOs would know where it is when they're getting together for lunch, so that they avoid collisions with conventional airplanes. Pilots are always looking, just can certify this, they're always looking for lights which stand out in the air more than objects. It's just like headlights on the ground. Comes nighttime, you want the other guy to have headlights on. And it may be a means for signaling. Who knows?
What if its propulsion system generates the glow, Stan?
I think the glow might indeed be connected to a propulsion system. You ionize the air, interact with electric and magnetic fields, magneto-aerodynamics, which sounds pretty exotic. But when I did a literature search on this decades ago, I got over 900 references. 90% of them were classified. This is a technical report search. You can control lift, drag, heating, sonic boom production. And incidentally, that glow stuff, we are interested because when nose cones come into the atmosphere, you know, with a little A-bomb or H-bomb on board, they ionize the air, and you want to be able to detect and tell the difference between the dummies and the real ones. And so you want to find out all about that, and I think it may be the key to their propulsion system, similar, and you'll get a kick out of this, to the electromagnetic submarine that was successfully operated way back in the 60s by Dr. Stuart Way of Westinghouse at University of California, Santa Barbara. Talked about that in my congressional testimony in 1968. It makes me feel old to say that.
It really does. Hey, Jesse, of everything your dad showed all of you, did he hold back anything in terms of, did he throw a little I-beam in a drawer or anything like that?
is all Air Force property, so I didn't keep you in it, and neither did any of us. No, this was not ours to keep.
That would be historical, Stan, if we had that, huh?
Well, yeah, I keep looking. I think there's some pieces out there, probably. Yeah, Pappy Henderson had some. We don't know where that wound up. He was a pilot on the base who flew some wreckage and only spoke about it after an article appeared in the newspaper in 1980. That's typical of military guys. He thought it was classified, but here's an article in the paper, so now he told his wife about it, and I talked to her and their daughter and his son-in-law, and no question, he had a piece. GIs, during World War II especially, had a tendency to bring back souvenirs, you know, all those Lugers and knives and all kinds of things. So I don't doubt that there are some pieces of wreckage someplace out there. And if anybody's got one, I know where to get it tested. Go to my website and call me.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with Stan and Jesse. Go ahead.
Hello, Jesse. Hello, Stan. Yes. And George.
Hi.
Yeah.
An honor and a pleasure to be able to speak to you, Jesse. I'd like to also thank you for your service to our country all these many years.
Well, thank you very much.
And,
appreciate that.
And I've been wanting to ask you this question for more than 10 years now. Well, actually, a question and a comment. Were you satisfied with your portrayal in the film version of yourself that came out 10 years ago, or I think 94?
Well, you know, there's a lot of poetic license with it. You know, like they depicted me keeping some of it back in a cigar box. Certainly that didn't happen. And I guess they portrayed the material as being on the kitchen table. It was on the floor. I mean, there are minor discrepancies.
Also, have you ever considered, for the sake of humanity, going under hypnosis to get a full and accurate picture of the events that took place your father brought those items home?
Yeah, they've tried hypnosis on me, but I guess I'm not a very good subject for hypnosis. I guess I'm not a real strong believer in being able to retrieve things that you can't retrieve consciously. Maybe it's true, but... I just think I'm not a very good subject for hypnosis, but they have tried.
I also have a comment for Stanton about the Betty and Barney Hill story. But also, Jesse, if you could answer also, do you plan on making or producing or being part of a production of your biography and your father's biography in the future?
Yeah, I don't know of any plans for that at this time.
Okay, for Stanton, I've spoken to you before. The James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons piece, the movie that they did for television about Betty and Barney Hill?
Yes.
That movie, there's some kind of controversy going on because it's not available anywhere. And the only existing copies were in Europe, in Germany, on VHS, and they were pulled from the market there. Now there are bootleg, really poor versions of it are available occasionally on eBay, but you cannot find it anywhere. It's as if there's a disinformation campaign not allowing people to view it. If you could find out about that with the niece, that with Betty's niece, why that